Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket podcast coverage of the TBT 2020. It's win or go home, and $1 million US is on the line, and the winner takes all. My co-host, Andrew Canyon, and I will be watching and breaking down every game from the tournament from an NBL and Australian perspective. Follow me on Twitter for NBL and TBT updates. That's at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D, and follow Andrew too at Andrew Canyon. That's Canyon, C-A-N-I-O-N. Are you in the business of buying a book? Try Booktopia. They have nearly 1,000 entries under the search basketball, but they have more than just sports books. They have everything and are based out of Sydney, Australia. Use the link in the description to help the podcast if you'd be so kind. Also, in the spirit of helping the show, rate, review, and subscribe. Any combination of all three is much appreciated. But right now, let's jump into it.
Let's do it. Let's start with the NBL news before we jump into things. I guess the first news from today is Ty Wesley retiring.
Big news.
My question to you, Andrew. Yeah, big news. What combination of surprise, sadness, and is there a third emotion you felt? What were the emotions you had?
Ooh, shock. Can we go with shock as well? I was not expecting this news. He seemed like, I know he was injured last year, obviously, but he came back. You put in the rehab work to get that done. I'm really surprised. And he's got a family to feed. We all know that, right? He's a grown man. He's got a family to feed. And
he had a good deal. I think he had 2+1. Like, it's not like he had 1 year left and he decided to kind of, I mean, we saw Lish recently. I think he had another year left. I'm not too sure. But yeah, Wesley, it looked like he was going to be sort of their guy over the next 3 years. I think it was a 2+1 and gone. And did not recite that injury as the reason why. Really just said he took the time away and felt, just didn't want to do it. Didn't want to move across the planet. And yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, I understand where he's coming from. It must be it's an arduous thing, I guess, getting ready for a season, performing, going through the pain and all that and the effort. And maybe you get to a point and you just think, can't be bothered. But
I wonder, I would like to know what was the balance between, let's say COVID wasn't going on at the minute, would he have still come to this decision? I don't think he would have.
No, I don't think so. I think you'd go around again. If it was as easy as jumping on a plane and you're here, why would you not do it? Because he was guaranteed. So
yeah. And then the other question I have is, what's going to happen with his naturalization? Is he a citizen of New Zealand? What's going on there? Like, does he have to take up residency in either New Zealand or Australia? Like, that's an interesting thing. If he ever thought to return or even sort of play for, you know, heck, the New Zealand team? Am I overreaching here? But I wonder where that's at.
Well, that was always the question with him, wasn't it? That he was going to become a local. That was always hanging over his head. He got in through
He was
that.
A local, then became an import. And yeah, he was going to go back. And
yeah, because he played when he got in by virtue of, what was he? Was he from Guam? So it was always a talk that he would have been this brilliant guy if he was naturalized, and it just sort of never played out that way. But he brought something different to the NBL. You remember Pat Reedy?
I do.
Mr. Footwork? He reminded me of him. We don't often get low post mover and shakers in the NBL, and he brought that.
Who can stay on the floor. He was one of those guys for sure. And a distributor. I was looking at their team going into next year, because I don't know if you watched Overtime from last week. Liam Santamaria was like, oh, John Robertson, they need a bit more of a distributor, which is a fair thought. And I was like, oh, but a healthy Ty Wesley kind of gives you that distribution, that passing game. Yeah. Not in the conventional point guard sense, but you kind of shift it over to the power forward spot. So I was like, oh, you kind of get that when he's healthy, but nope, not anymore.
No. So no more low post, high post. He was good at both positions. He had sneaky good three-point shooter.
Yep.
He was
probably had the best 5 minutes stretch in the NBL 20 when that first 5 minutes where he hit a two, then hit a three. I think he had an assist and then pulled his hamstring. Crazy.
Yeah, it was going to be a great season opener for him, wasn't it? Until that happened. So yeah, I think, you know, congratulations, Ty Wesley. You did well. Good, a great career.
Fun to watch. Unique player, and that was good.
Yeah, my hat
kind of goes. Oh, sorry, Andrew.
Yeah, I was going to say my hat's off to him. You know, good competitor.
Kind of bodes well for Armoured Athlete's own John Robertson. You would think the need to retain him becomes a little bit stronger, don't you feel?
I think so. They need that. They need a scoring punch, and he's that. You know, you what are you giving away? You're losing 15, 20 potentially from Wesley. Mm. I mean, where are you going to fill that hole? So you need a guaranteed scorer. So, yeah.
And also you lose, like, Ty Wesley was such a statesman of not only the NBL, but, you know, sort of the leadership of that team. If you lose both of those two guys, I feel like you lose, because Robertson's sort of early 30s, you lose a lot of maturity, you lose a lot of professionalism from a young club. I feel like, I feel this is a good move for Robertson to re-sign. And then just that little bit of stability in a new team. If your first year in and you totally revamp your imports, not a great look and feel, you know what I mean? So I think it bodes well for him. I mean, you look at their lineup is looking like something like this going into next year. Robertson, Glidden, Tarangi, Creek, and then presumably they're going to go with an import big. I've seen no reports of that, but you would assume so.
Yep.
My question to you, Andrew, is that an upgrade over last year's NBL 20, Robertson, Magin, Creek, Ty Wesley, the former, and Pinot?
It's probably a push, really. I don't see much improvement.
It's all comes down to Glidden.
They need a gun import, don't they? Otherwise,
it depends who you get with that import slot. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's more of the same. Now, Magin was a disappointment to me last season. I thought he might bring a little more, but I think Father Time caught up with him. But you're bringing in Cam Glidden instead, who jury's out on him, right? Was it a bad season?
That was my question to you. Like, what on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your confidence in Cam Glidden?
About a 4.
Yeah,
I think maybe
again push 4 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the league may have passed him by. He may be saved if the level of import isn't as high this year. He may be saved.
Right. Very good. What do you think of Tarangi? Tarangi and Creek in combination. What do you think?
Well, my question is Tarangi going to find himself in the same situation where he gets no court time? Because he seems like wherever he goes, he's sort of third man in the rotation.
I think he's going to start. I think that lineup makes a lot of sense to me. Robertson, Glidden, Tarangi, Creek. Or is Creek going to shift down to the 3? What do you think? And keep Pinot in the starting lineup? Very possible, actually. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. I mean, does Creek like playing 3 or 4 these days? Or does that even matter? Are there such a thing anymore? Is it all just...
That's why I could have easily read it out as Robertson, Glidden, Creek, Tarangi, and an import. They better import. They better get their imports right. Yeah. They didn't do it in NBL 20.
Yeah, and Tarangi, you got to bring some consistency. That's what
I have faith in him. I don't know what happened up in Brisbane. I have more faith in Tarangi than I do in Glidden. I don't know why I say that, but I just feel that way. I actually do like the look of that top team. If Glidden, by all accounts, did just take a back step year, if he can step up, if Tarangi can step up, if it truly was, the big thing out of Brisbane was like, oh, they were lost in the rotation. I don't believe that. If you're a good player, no matter how many players are playing your position, you put your flag in the ground of, no, I'm getting 30 minutes. The rest of them can work it out, you know? And neither of them did that. So, but I do like the idea of, again, I come back to Liam Samaria when he talks about more distributing, because I feel that's pretty fair. I feel with a healthy Gibson helps that, but also Creek. I just like the idea of Creek breaking guys down, getting into the key weight, and actually not a flary passer, not a guy you'd think, but when you are as aggressive at the basket as him and you get into the key weight, guys are going to collapse. And Mitch Creek is capable of making a chest pass to an open Cam Glidden or Tarangi or Robertson on the 3-point line. I feel like that's where you get your distribution. Mm. It doesn't have to be the sexy point guard to come in. You can kind of get it from him, I think.
That's a good way of looking at it. And just surrounding Mitch Creek with shooters and saying bully ball until you bully can't ball. And then get out. Yeah,
I just see him taking 2 dribbles to get by a guy. If he catches up, then he turns his back into him, and then he's backing him down. A double team's going to come, or at least some sort of collapse, and you go from there. And Robertson needs just we saw it yesterday, a snifter of space, and he's in.
I don't even think he needs that.
Yeah. Let's go to Cairns. Let's jump through. The options on them, we spoke about this off-air. Kwatnoi, Mirko Jeric, Krizlovic. Again, we talked about surprise with Ty Wesley. Any surprise here?
No, I think if anything, it's a vote of confidence in Mike Kelly and what he's doing up there. There was so much consternation when he was brought into the team. Then last year, or the year before last, perhaps, he didn't really have time to build a roster. You know, it was a last minute signing.
Mm.
I think he has done great things. And I think you get those young guys bought into a system. They're the only way is up, and they're already pretty high. So what does that say for this season?
And Noy was hurt half the year. I liked the few minutes I saw him, and I really liked him. And Mirko Jerich is fearless. I like a player like that. Hopefully that confidence carries over. And then Krstljevic, like, geez, stretchy, rangy bigs. There's always a place for him in modern basketball.
He was impressive last season. He doesn't look like much. He's not the guy at. He doesn't strike fear in your heart as he steps on the court. But, yeah, some quality play that he showed last year. I think another year under his belt, he's going to cause some problems.
I totally agree. I think the other thing I wanted to ask you, and the question I've been throwing around in my mind is, are either Noy or Krstljevic or both in sort of the aggregate or combination an insurance against Cam Oliver not returning? Because obviously imports have come down to two. By all accounts, they're pretty hot on Machado, and that's the right way to go. You got it. He's the premium of the three. And then it's a question of Newbolt and Cam Oliver. I don't think these moves are any strong indication that, because we've now got Noy and Krstljevic, we're not going to bring back Cam Oliver. You know what I mean? Where do you see this? Like, do you feel like that's any insurance, or are they still going to be pretty bullish on Cam Oliver?
I think you're right in the sense they're going to do it by committee. You can't just replace a Cam Oliver, can you? And I don't think he's coming back. I reckon he's one and done.
He's playing in Israel as we speak.
Yeah, I think bigger, better offers will come his way. Mm. I do like, for Kansas' sake, I like the idea of bringing DJ Newbolt back. He seemed like that glue guy. You know, he would do the dirty work. He'd bring people together. You could ride his shooting from time to time. He just seemed like the kind of guy that you want.
Of the year.
Yeah. And underrated, low maintenance.
Yeah, very low maintenance, and played quite well the other day in the TVT, but I wouldn't be basing any opinions off that one game. But, I mean, you look at it. I think you would think Cairns, though, if they're sitting at a table, their objective would be to bring back Cam Oliver over Newbolt, don't you think? I think that just being able to say, we've got two imports, they top and tail, one small, one big, you know, we've done the best we can. Whereas if you bring back two guards, it would take a little bit more explaining if it didn't go well, if you know what I mean?
True. But I don't know. I think to me, DJ Newbolt seems like one of those guys now.
I agree.
You almost go down the Rob Rose path. You sort of build around him. You make him your corner piece. You got Machado, but he may get an NBA offer, you know. DJ Newbolt, if you lock him in, you're fine. He's your corner piece. Cam Oliver, I think there's too much chance that he'll go somewhere else.
I agree. And I think also you look at all of Cam Oliver's highlights, three quarters of them are coming off passes from Machado. Machado can make any – I'm not downgrading Cam Oliver's talent, but, geez, we saw it in the TBT. Scott Machado can make a lot of people look very, very good. Yeah. And Cam Oliver was a perfect complement, but, gee, if that's Kouat Noy, a healthy Kouat Noy, I think it's not as explosive, it's not as sexy. Maybe it's not – instead of an alley-oop, it's a bounce pass, but it's still 2 points, if you know what I mean.
I've got flashbacks to the Paul Rogers MVP year. You know, that was Ricky Grace's award. Totally Paul agree. Rogers still buys him dinner occasionally for that one. Same situation, I think.
That's all the NBL news. I think I'm not hitting. Am I missing anything else, Andrew?
No, big day. Oh, just generally, we've spoken specifically, but the entire free agents list has been released today. I think the headline act in that is your friend of mine, Chris Goulding.
Do you want to talk about that? Your call. Let's do it. Let's do it. Why not?
Yeah. Look,
Chris Goulding, and where's this list? Is it on NBL.com?
It is. Yeah. Yep.
Is it alphabetical or is he just the first one up?
No, it's a list broken down by club. The little article that is attached to it mentions Goulding headlining the free agency list.
Okay. All right. Chris Goulding, you've seen some of the videos I've made, some of the comments I've made. What are your thoughts on him?
Chris Goulding is one of these. He's a polarizing player. I think we can put that out there. I think there's some players somehow manage to build a brand around themselves that is greater than the actuality of their performances, whether it be personality, the look they've got, the image they portray. Just some guys, they have it. you know?
Yeah, I agree. Good on them. And he's got talent. You believe he's that's him? He's got a great brand.
Very cool. You know, it looks smooth.
Cool guy.
You know, has the good haircuts, you know, whether it's long, whether it's short, he can pull it off. But if you look and the way that he plays, it's a splashy kind of, it's almost like every 3-point
splashy
shot.
Splashy is a good word.
Every 3-point shot he makes almost feels like it's worth 4 points. Just something in the way that he shoots.
He's got he does the this is the one that is a real highlight favorite, where you shoot it and then you tuck the hands up behind the back, almost like you're tucking the back of your shirt in. You know, those shots where you shoot into, that's something that plays well with casual fans. They seem to like that one. And I get it. I'm partial to back in the day doing that maneuver myself.
But
kind of like you, it's too hot to touch.
But if you break down the numbers, and you've done this, so you know, there are players out there that don't get the kudos and the recognition, but on a purely numerical basis are doing the same body of work. So,
and this is a video I put out, and I put some caveats on that because I like him as a player. I think he's definitely a big shot maker. He's fearless, and confidence and fearlessness is an ingredient in basketball. It's very, very important. But, you know, is he a 30-minute player? Has he become one-dimensional? Like, I haven't got a breakdown of how many of his shots were from the outside of the keyway. Outside the three-point line, but it's a lot. And when you're not a threat on the inside, you're less of a threat on the outside. You know, if you can do both, you're much greater. Hit a lot of threes. I think he was second in three-point makes behind Robertson, which is, you know, that's elite company. That's fine. Yep. But, I mean, I just, again, like we're now into 2 years in a row where I don't think Chris Golding has played. Well, he hasn't made any NBL first or second teams. Hasn't even really been particularly close. But yet it's like, oh, you got to re-sign this guy. When I say the words got to re-sign, the next names are Machado, Cotton, Cam Oliver, you know, guys in the NBL first and second team, because you got to re-sign him.
Yep.
Chris Golding's not in that, but yet has that reputation. And what we were talking about this last time. You go, Andrew.
I was going to say, is Chris Golding, is he climbing the hill or is he sliding down the other side?
Well, he's 31, 32, so the numbers would tell you that he's going the opposite way.
So I don't know if you're going to throw up big coin. Are you going to throw big coin at a guy that's on the downward slide?
Exactly. And I think with the other thing I thought with him as well, it's 2 years where it hasn't been up to standard. Before it was with Casper Ware, you know, arguably the best and winningest point guard in the NBL other than Cotton the last couple of seasons. And it didn't quite work there. And the excuse then was, the fit with McCarron was off and DJ Kennedy, it didn't quite work together. Okay, well, that was that year. And then we get a different point guard. Oh, this year it was Melo Trimble and Sean Long. They weren't of the character. Like, what's next year's excuse going to be? Like, the rims are the wrong color. You know, like, good players play well, or at least they're supposed to. And I'm kind of like, you know, I'll give them another chance, but I'm still like, at some point, you got to show it. And I grow tired of the excuses. We'll see. We'll see.
I expect to see him back in Melbourne colours, though. I'll put that on, the table.
One thing I will say is his management is Lighthouse Sports, which has the likes of, they've been quite aggressive this offseason. They have Cam Oliver on their books. They have Matt Hodgson on their books, who opted out and in, a player who you wouldn't have thought would have been that sort of testy with the bounds of free agency this year. So there has been a lot of movement from that agent. Mitch McCarron opted back in, but was kind of dicey about it and not happy. Cooks opted out and back in. So they've got a number of clients who they're kind of like very willing to put the feelers out. But, you know, Chris Golding, is he all of a sudden going to go to Sydney? He doesn't want to do that. He's at 31, 32. He wants to sign a 2-3 year deal in Melbourne, stay there. That's his life. That would be what I would think.
Yeah. He needs to start thinking about post-basketball life. You talk about building his brand. I think that's his next. How can he parlay this last contract?
Does he want to go to Tasmania? Like, everyone's like, oh, he's from Tasmania. He lived there till he was like five or something. I heard the Adam Gibson podcast with him. He was there for a couple of years. Like, yes, he's from Tasmania, but that's like a lot of people are from a lot of different places. That doesn't blow my skirt up.
If you want to be technical, then I'm from Tasmania. I was born there.
There you go.
I left there when I was two. You know, I've never been back. I don't really feel like I'm a Tasmanian.
Yeah, there you go. So that I dismiss pretty good. I mean, you would not trade, no offense to anyone in Tasmania, I'm sure it's lovely, but Melbourne's, he seems pretty happy there.
I think so.
That's about it, really. Do you want to jump into the questions from day 3 of the TBT?
Let's do it. That's what we're here for, right. TBT.
TBT, your overarching question, you go for your first one. You ask me.
Yeah, okay. So the very first, this is, you will notice the TBT is playing 9-minute quarters.
Mm.
What do you think of that as my initial question to you?
Initial human reaction, I don't like odd numbers. 8, 10 is fine. It's just round, soft, even numbers, odd numbers, 9 minutes. Is there a rationale behind it? Have you heard why?
I have absolutely no idea. I can only assume it's some timing thing.
TV,
fit
maybe.
Into a segment, you know, that's what pops into my mind. I do not know. But it leads into the further question. Are you a 10-minute or a 12-minute quarter guy?
We've 12.
Been down. 12?
I'm 12 under this proviso. So 10, it feels like you're a little bit shortchanged. 12 is a good amount, but the NBA gets it wrong because it's all those timeouts. They supplement the 12. If you were to have, like if the NBL just went to 12 minutes but kept the timeouts the way they are and the breaks quite short, perfect basketball product. No debate. NBA games can go way too long and it's not a result of the 12 minutes. It's the result of all the stuff they add on. So I'm a 12-minute guy. You?
Agreed. Yeah, I'm the same way. Mm. I don't like going to games. I get myself a beer. I just settle down. I'm starting to enjoy the game and suddenly there's 3 minutes left in the quarter. It's like, yeah. Come on. I'm only just getting into it. It takes you to the second half to really engage in the game and then it's almost over. So no, give me 12 minutes plus. From a player development point of view, I know there's the argument, you pay to see the stars, yada, yada. Nah, I want to see the young guys get a bit of a run as well.
Yeah.
And there's just no time.
And bench play becomes a bigger factor for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's important, I feel, through the course of a season. You know, you shouldn't just be able to get behind 8 guys. You should need 9, maybe 10 at times and give someone a chance to star. And it's a nice storyline when an 8th or 9th guy kind of has his day. You know, maybe it's just one game of the season. What else? And also with 12, like it's a simple numbers thing. And a lot of NBL games last season got up to the hundreds. But with 12 minutes, you're almost guaranteed it's going to be in the 90 to 100. And that's just, it just looks better in print.
Yes.
Than a 70. When a score's in the 70s, it's jarring. It's sevens. It may be lucky, but it's not a nice number in text. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think there's still a generation of people that brought up on if you didn't score 30 points in a game, like Andrew Gaze style, you're not that good. So, you know, you get our top scores now, 20, 22, you've had a pretty good game. Yeah, just. Like getting to 100,
does it?
It's like big
deal. It
doesn't
roll. I agree. I totally agree. I just think you bring back into the past. You kind of it links basketball and also the NBA. Why the connection to FIBA? Why not just go? You know, it's aligning itself with the NBA. Just do it, Larry Kesselman. Just change it, Larry Kesselman can change what he wants. He wants a team in New Zealand. Tasmania. It happens. You know, what 12 minutes? It happens. But and with no TV deal, or at least there is that thing with ESPN. But I'm sure they wouldn't mind. And sometimes at the end of the game, there'll be, you know, what would have been game time, you know, 15 minutes of, you know, decompressing the game. Just play. Just play.
But there anyway. We go. So I'm going to email Larry now. I'm going to say 12-minute quarters and an ELAM ending. Done.
Perfect. You can put my name co-signed at the bottom if you don't mind. My question to you, Andrew, coming from day 3, was one I put up on Twitter. Got some answers to it. You gave a short answer, but I'll let you go into the greater depth here. Who would you get from the NBL ranks from NBL 20? What NBL coach would you get to coach an NBL team select over to the TBT and why?
Yeah, and do you want to mention who you nominated?
Yes, I nominated Joey Wright. And I'll tell you why. You tell me who and why, and then I'll tell you why I chose Joey Wright.
Okay. Well, first of all, Joey Wright, it's a pretty good choice, I think. So I'll just lay that out there. My answer to you on Twitter was quite facetious. I suggested perhaps Will Weaver would be an interesting option just to see how he would manage his substitution patterns. I think you would have guys getting one bucket and substituted. So he's pretty rapid with those.
If the ELAM ending was like you get the score is added up plus 8 and then you can only have 8 substitutions in the last 4 minutes, that might work for Will Weaver as well. But I said Joey, but who would you give as an honest answer? If you can't give Joey Wright.
Okay, so I can't. I actually, the first two guys that came into my mind are no longer in the coaching ranks. And they were Phil Smythe and Lindsay Gaze. Both because...
Wow.
I'm really winding it back here.
All right.
But my thinking behind those two were both, they basically don't really coach.
Yep.
They say,
good point.
Roll it out there, see how you're feeling. If you're feeling good, jack it up. If you're feeling a bit uncomfortable, pass it off. And that to me seems like a pretty good TBT formula.
I agree. Phil Smythe, I think, if you want to be a little bit more contemporary, I think of the two would perhaps be a little bit more, even now, a bit more sprightly on his feet and capable.
Yeah. Do you think they could get the shuffle offense running in the TBT?
I don't know. Good question.
But no, of the current crop of coaches, I would probably go with Mike Kelly. I think he's proved himself to be engaging with the young players who you're going to have at a TBT tournament. Mm-hmm. He understands the fast pace. He knows how to get the best out of players. We've seen that. And he does have some defensive fundamentals that would probably come in pretty handy. I mean, he won Defensive Player of the Year for the league. So,
and I don't know whether he resides in Cairns or back in the United States, but if he does in the United States, one less plane ticket. You know, you're saving both ways. The reason why I said Joey Wright was three things. First of all, his style, that open play, push it up and down, play good defense and then push. You know, I think that works well, especially the attack the basket mentality and kick it out for threes. I think that works in TBT. Secondly, like this TBT to me, it's all about guts. You've just got to have big shot makers throughout the game. You can't, a specialist doesn't really seem to work at the TBT. You got to have five guys on the court who can all play. And I feel like that's kind of the style that Joey does want to emulate. And then this was the big reason I went with Joey Wright. And I was considering Trevor Gleeson, but I thought he might be a little too structured for TBT. Micro adjustments. Joey Wright doesn't suffer fools gladly. Like if he sees something he doesn't like, he's going to yell about it right then and there, and his players are going to know. A lot of coaches will wait for the timeout to kind of, you know, delicately say, hey, Joey Wright's going to yell it out straight away. And in a tight 9-minute Elam ending, all this stuff going on, you need a coach who's just going to say, hey, we're effing up there. Did I? Like, and Joey Wright, you heard him do that in a 40-minute NBL game. Exactly. So that's why I'd have Joey.
Fair enough. I don't think there's, like I said, I think that's a good choice.
Thank you. I think Mike
Kelly might, you might just not want to have Eric Griffin and Ramon Moore in the same team.
I wouldn't have Joey. If I was a Team Hines, I wouldn't have Joey Wright. But who knows? They couldn't do any worse than they did. They're eliminated. They're gone. So, funnily enough, by sideline cancer, when I saw sideline cancer, I thought, well, if it was locker room cancer, maybe Eric Griffin. That's just reports. I don't make the news. I just repeat it. The next question I had for you is, will a coach ever concoct a style of play that can allow and take advantage of all these sort of 6'2" nuggety point guards on the floor and have like two or three on the court at the one time? We've seen sort of 2-point guard teams where you've got two shorter point guards. But I mean, look at this tournament. Like Marcus Keane yesterday was dominant. The guy today, Johnson Odom.
Yeah,
Scott Machado, like Robertson there sharing a backcourt. Is there any way you can get three of these guys? Like imagine if Armand Athlete had got, like they were going to, Machado, Robertson, and Cotton. Is there going to be a way? Because the value, there are so many good smaller players around. If you could put three of them on the court at one time, I don't know. Is it possible? Am I reaching? What do you think?
It's definitely going in that direction. Mm. You look at the way... The value of a rebound is not what it used to be.
Mm-mm.
You're basically, you put a shot up and then you're willing to let the offensive rebound contest go in the interest of getting back. So I think what you can do, if you have a good passing big man, then yeah, put little guys around him and just ping away.
Like I look at Dane Pinot, for example. Like if you had, let's say you had Machado, Cotton, and Robertson. And then if you just teamed him with Dane Pinot and said, listen, you're not going to catch the ball much off a pass, so you may as well go and get it off the backboard. It's what you're best at anyway. And just let him be the only offensive rebounding threat. And then a couple others, like, I just feel like, and if you're an NBL GM standing there with however much they pay their import, the bang for your buck, the amount of smaller six feet to six feet yep. two point guards you can play, if you try and use that money to go and get a big guy, you're in the Cam Oliver market, you're in the Sean Long market, you're going to get priced out. You're not going to get return on that money. Whereas for that money, you could get, you know, all these great scoring point guards. And if you could somehow get a coach, you can work them onto the floor at once, You're getting bang for your buck, if nothing else.
I mean, I think in America, I think you go to aisle four in Walmart and there's just a row of 6'2 point guards who can score.
With broad shoulders who can get to the basket and
take your pick. Yeah. They're everywhere. So if you got to change the game, right? If you can't win the way it's constructed now, change the rules. So maybe changing the rules is doing what you're doing. What you're suggesting is get a bunch of small, stocky, shooting guards and see what happens.
Yeah, for the price.
What's the worst that could happen? You lose.
Have you got a question for me? Yeah, you lose.
I've got a question for you. The thing that TBT has shown for me is it's a reminder of the love that the United States have for their their colleges and alumni attachment they have for them. All right. Half these teams are alumni teams. Did you go to uni?
And I did, but
no offense if you didn't.
I did, but sadly didn't. Still deferred. So
it's a boost.
I could barely even tell you what university I went to. It doesn't matter to me. But why do you ask?
Well, the reason I was going to ask is, and I can say I did go to university. Believe it or not, I graduated. So the question I was going to ask, therefore, is: do you feel any connection to the university you attended?
No.
Me either. I feel like I was a customer. I was a number for the period of time that I was there paying my fees.
Bizarre, isn't it?
But I don't care. And I know they don't care about me.
No, but it's the opposite over there. You figure it out. You let me know. My sort of real flare-up answer would be when it comes to college sports, like sort of the American appetite for, here we go, doing the dodge. Just sort of getting your sports players, not paying them. I don't know. It's a way of just circumnavigating the economics of it. But that's the sort of cynical view of college sports.
It's. I just find it really interesting, the love of the college that they have.
I mean, films like Animal House maybe impregnate that idea that it's the best time of your life and live it up, and that's just carried on into the culture. Maybe that's put it on the culture, or the culture's reflected in that film and films like it. I don't know. Good question.
Yeah.
Question I had from today's play: have you reconsidered our previous assertion that an NBL like sort of B-ish team would hands down win this thing? This took a step up this game today, I felt. Are you still of that mind, or have you changed?
I think it was about 4 minutes into the second quarter. And I thought, these guys are shooting really well. I'm not sure we have this kind of shooting talent in Australia.
And the defensive ability and intensity stepped up. Yeah,
I did.
I reconsidered my assertion. I think the group stage of 24 was a little bit of a bit of smokes and mirrors. Some of the teams.
We need to send the A-team guys, right?
Yeah, we'd have to. There would need to be imports on the team. Yeah, and if you're taking all locals, like a Nick Kay is needed, a Will Magne is needed, your top line are needed. I think, I can't wait for the games coming up for the top
line. It does highlight the one thing that Australia still does seem to lack. Are those knockdown shooters?
Yeah. I felt aggression at the basket as well. This game was aggressive today between Team CP3 and Golden Eagles. Guys were attacking the hoop strong. The contact was hard. This was a step up.
It sounds like we're into it. Play the intro music. We're talking the game.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do the game. All right. So TBT day 3, game 1 of 1. There was meant to be another game today, but that team, Evelyn Drive, tested positive for COVID. So Brotherly Love, the Ramon Moore and Eric Griffin team, Ramon Moore and DJ Newble team goes through the next round. Did you watch the whole thing? The reason why I ask is my KO Sports telecast began at about halfway through the first quarter for some reason.
I got the whole game. I'm sure I got the whole game.
Did I miss much in that first 5 minutes?
You missed some really good shooting.
Yeah, I heard the commentary. I sort of got a sense of that. Yeah,
yeah, it was just they just started lights out.
That was my first note. Intensity up, underlined.
Yeah, and the defensive pressure as well.
Big time.
They really were defending the ball hard. They weren't letting guys get into position.
Golden Eagles were, or both?
Golden Eagles, yeah. CP3
especially,
yeah.
So just to clarify, Team CP3 is ranked number 13, Golden Eagles number 4, and it showed. They set the pace, the standard, everything from the get-go.
Yeah, and the Eagles, they were actually running. It seemed like they were running at half-court sets.
They were. They had these nifty little back cuts. They had these nifty little curl cuts and things. Yeah, it was organized.
Hadn't really seen that to date, you know. Mm. So it really showed out. What have I got here? Yeah, that they had at the half though. Three jumping ahead to the halftime score.
Do it.
The Eagles were 9 of 11 for threes at the half.
Yeah, see, I saw half of those and thought it was pretty remarkable.
I mean, they were just, and it was Darius Johnson.
Johnson Odom.
Odom, yeah. He's a lefty.
He was amazing. He's the lefty. This is what I've got highlighted here from Golden Eagles, the lefty, 6'2", 100 kilos. If he was 100 kilos, I'd take the over on that. Thank you. He was really strong across the shoulders. Plays in Italy in the first league over there and apparently does pretty well. Unfortunately, not a free agent if NBL teams are looking around. But, yeah, he was, again, 6'2", nuggety, long across the shoulders, can shoot, lefty. He was a guy who I thought, is he a free agent? I'd love to see him in the NBL.
But like you were saying earlier, every team seems to have one of those guys, right?
Everyone's got them.
He got 19 at the half, 5 of 5 threes. So
just and did it from everywhere, like threes, but he could get to the basket. Yep. He could defend. He was a real asset. I thought he was amazing. Did you feel like, I've got written down my notes here, the NBL doesn't play like this. This game had aggression and ego. Like, did you just feel how much sort of make a shot, look at the guy was going on in this game?
Yeah.
Maybe it's the tournament. I don't know. The tournament atmosphere of win or go home.
Looking at my notes. I wrote down here, I said it's willing down low. They were really going at it. And I like the way it was called. You know, the refs let them bang.
Mm.
We talked about this the other day, I think, but I feel like every time in the NBL, if you have a tiny bit of contact, it's just like they just blow a whistle. It doesn't matter whether it's offensive or a defensive foul. They're going to call a foul. Whereas here it was like, just go at it.
They let it go. And I, here was my rationale for this, and maybe this is a little oversimplistic, but I looked at the referees, right? First of all, African-American guys. Taught, trim, athletic, look like former players.
Yeah.
You know, they, if not current players, somewhere in a decent rec league somewhere. Hey, and they just look, you can immediately go and say, oh, they've played basketball just by their physique.
Yeah.
And you look at the NBL refs, I'm not so certain. And I'm not going to name any names, but they're not the cut of these guys. These guys look like, if they were wearing different colors, you'd think they were in the game.
Yeah.
So I think there's that understanding level. And then, they just look like players. And I thought that really stood out to me. One note I've got here is either one of these teams is going to smoke Brotherly Love, don't you think, in the next round? That's the Ramon Moore, DJ Newble team. They were just so much more dynamic.
I'm looking at this Eagles team and just thinking, I wouldn't want to come up against them. They seemed organized. They've got a bit of everything.
That's what the commentator, Dan Dakich, the guy, you know, the real southern guy. He even said, there's a quote, he goes, Golden Eagles, this is the best team of the tournament thus far. I was about to ask you, do you agree with that?
I do, from what I've seen so far. Now, I'm not going to say that they are the best team. They're the best team I've seen so far. Mm. But they were good, weren't they?
They had a spread across. I think I'm an athlete. I'm not just saying this because they're NBL guys, Machado and Robson, but I feel like that's the best backcourt.
Yeah,
This had a spread. Like, they had a real nice big guy. I've got his name in my notes later on. He hit that big 3-and-1, the four-point play. We're going ahead, but what was your next note?
Look, it was exciting to see Dickie again, your Marge Simpson.
The Black Marge Simpson, Dickie. James Dickie, yep.
Just fun to see him. You know, I just I feel like I like him as a person.
I thought that hair was going to change. You know, I had a feeling. I was like, maybe he's going to wear it down tonight. You know those episodes where Marge wears the hair down sometimes?
If you're on a good thing, you got to stay with it. So, but look, his hair was good, but his game was not.
No, he was a bit – the footwork wasn't there. Like, you could tell he's not quite that pro polish.
Not polished, no.
Athletic, but not the pro polish. Yep.
He's the kind of guy, he's handy to have in the defensive end, but then you're sort of playing 4-on-5 at the other end. Yep. So then for the Eagles, I don't know if you noticed Jameel Wilson, he was a power forward, number 0.
He's the guy who hit the shot. He's the one who hit the shot. He's the one I'm talking about. Nice body on him. Yeah, I liked him.
I got excited about him, and then he did a couple of clumsy things, and I've got a little down arrow next to my notes. And then a few good things, and I put a little up arrow next to his nose.
The dreaded down arrow.
So I'm going to give him a pass mark on the averages.
He hit a big three and shot, I'll say that much.
He but sure did. That's the one where he counted them off. Is that right?
He counted them off. That was great theatre for sure. The guy,
the crowd loved it. They ate it up.
The guy who I thought really stood out, and again, like every time we go to these games, it was so evident in the last round, it's like spot the pro player. And they don't take long to present themselves. It's like whack-a-mole. Yeah. They'll eventually pop up and you'll go, oh, there's the pro guy. And to me, it was the guy Dwight Bikes. Do you know that guy?
Yes.
Was spelt very peculiar, his surname, B-Y-U-C-K-S, something like that.
Yeah.
He was the guy. I always like to look at, all right, who's the guy who kind of, when the game gets a little bogged down or shifts the momentum back in his team's favor. And there was a time in the fourth when scores got back to within eight. And then I could tell, I was like, all right, the ball's gone through this guy.
Yep.
And he spoon fed a layup to someone. I haven't got it written down.
That was the reverse mm-hmm. drop off.
Oh yeah, that's right. The behind the back pass. That was him. So that was terrific through the paint. And I think that was to arrest momentum. Team CP3 had brought it to within eight and then he got it back up to 10. Elam Ending was set at 75 and I was like, all right, let's see what he does in the Elam Ending. What did he do? He gave the pass to Jameel Wilson for that 3+1.
Yep.
What else did he do? He had 2 points. You go.
I've got a note here. I don't know whether it was in the Elam Ending or not, but he had a spin move. He took it to the basket off this beautiful spin. I'm not sure if that was in Elam Ending or it was before that, but
I'll say this: in the Elam Ending, he had 2 points, and then got and could have been and one had heaps of contact on it. And I think it's the one you're talking about. And then he was the guy who broke down the play at the end, got an open jump shot, didn't make it. But again, we saw a winner off an offensive rebound.
Yeah.
It's now the second, maybe third time in the tournament. How did you see that? And the last couple of plays.
Yeah. Well. And the guy who got the rebound, he didn't appear to even be that tall.
No.
You know, he wasn't like the giant.
Didn't center. Seem to have a lot of contest for it either. Like no. Once this was a real, I've got it highlighted and it's a talking point of yours. This was a big Elam Ending psychology experiment where the Golden Eagles looked like they were going to kind of lose it a bit. They were, momentum was leaving them.
Yeah.
And then it was Bikes who pulled them out of it. And yeah, that they looked like they were wilting a bit, and it was him. And because what's his name, Darius Johnson Odom, kind of disappeared in the second half and fourth.
He did. Hence my down arrow.
Down arrow. He had a huge first half, very little in the second. Yeah. You got any other notes for me?
Nothing. What have I got down here? A couple of little things. First of all, just an observation. Not really about the game. But green and yellow, is that one of the best color combinations you can have on a basketball court? Like just nice to look at.
Yeah, very nice.
The Elam Ending, this the trigger for it, it needs to get cleaned up. I think you were saying this yesterday.
Yep.
You know, it was almost an intentional or unsportsmanlike foul.
Yeah,
I thought.
It was like a grab in the midcourt. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, why they're doing it is obvious to trigger the Elam Ending. But you need some rules around that. And it just seems like every time they've gone to Elam Ending, it's basically happened at 3:59 because somebody has done something to trigger it.
Yes, so, like it's been an intentional foul or some sort of trickery of the rules to get the clock to stop. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're kidding ourselves, right? It might as well just be 4 minutes and there you go.
Yeah. Just at 4 minutes, whoever's got the ball, whistle blows. An automatic timeout, it's in effect.
Yeah.
If it's obviously, if you're in the middle of a play, I'd have a shot. I'd have a shot clock down to the 4 minute mark.
Yeah.
And just be like, nope, that's it. That's when it's coming in. Let's not kid ourselves. Yeah, I agree.
Because it's just, it's pointless pretending that it's going to be this randomized feature that it's going to run down to 2 minutes before the Elam Ending kicks in. I like that in theory. Yeah, that would be fun in theory, but it's never going to happen. So
yeah, in theory, it would be nice if players weren't as conscious of it, but they so are that. And when you've got a coach there who's like, "Yeah, foul, let's enact the Elam Ending." Yeah, we're not kidding anyone about what's going on.
You know, do you find with some of these guys, are there guys that pop up on the court and you think that guy is going to be good, and then he turns out he's not that good, and it's a bit of a disappointment.
I have. Did you have that in this game?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Who?
Roundtree.
Yes. I think he may have played a bit of NBA actually, or been. Let me Google it quickly. What did you not like or not like about him?
He big unit. He just looked the part. You know, he looked like he knew his way around a court. He had good size, and I thought he's going to be a bit of a beast underneath, and just did nothing. I'm looking at, you know, Team CP3. I should clarify. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at this. He played 23 minutes. He got 4 points, one rebound, one defensive rebound.
Yeah, no, not going to cut it.
And just the kind of guy that you get all excited about. She's like, yeah, he's gonna dominate. He's gonna feast.
Yeah,
and just didn't. And you think, oh, that was a letdown.
I don't know if I had that. I was expecting he played quite well and he hit a couple of big shots late, but I was expecting a little bit more from. He played quite well in the first round, is why I had it. Is the guy with the headband for Team CP3? He hit the three. Where have I got it written down here? Nate Mason hit a couple of threes early on.
Yeah,
felt a bit shackled in this game. He had a couple of shots.
Big scorer in the first game.
Mm. He put up a big score, and I was like, okay, what's going on? And I don't think. Do you have the stats in front of you? Do you know what he finished? I do. With?
Yeah, he finished with 30 minutes, 4 points.
See, I felt he was shackled. I felt they just went away from putting him in a little bit more ISO at the top, a little bit giving him a little bit more freedom. Didn't happen for him, and as a result, 4 points not enough. And I think he had a big three to kind of bring things back a bit, or maybe it was a long two, but he had a couple of points. If you looked at those 4 points, I think most of them came either in the fourth quarter or maybe even the double E.
Yeah, and he was lucky to get two of them because one of them was a sort of a ridiculous sort of falling over.
Fall of baseline shot late. Yeah, I remember that one.
Just one other point I've got here. I need to learn to take better notes. That's one of the lessons I'm taking out from this. My notes are all over the shop. That jump ball they called towards the end of the game.
I have that written down here. Officiating question mark, jump ball late. That was ridiculous. It was not a held possession.
Yeah, he put his hands on it for maybe a second, if that.
And then the offensive player wrenched it through.
Yeah, and he really had no purchase on the ball. It wasn't like it was a real contest. I thought they got that really wrong, and it was disappointing because it was right when the Eagles were sort of choking, and you thought, CP3 are having a run here. They'd just been scoring twos, you know, they've been chipping away, and I thought that was a real killer.
I agree.
And it wasn't right. That wasn't a jump ball.
There was a couple of missed calls. As much as there were missed calls, always going to happen. Still, the officials carried themselves with, I kind of want to say, like a grace and maintain control. Like sometimes if this had happened in an NBL game, you would have just seen it get dragged down into the mud. Like everyone. But these two guys were able to, despite having a bad day, keep it just above reproach. And for that reason, you know, that's a skill in itself because games are always going to go this way. So you could learn a lot from these guys as well. Yep. Just quietly, that Dwight Bikes, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, he plays for Olympiakos in Greece and is like a EuroLeague standard. So
no wonder he's good.
No wonder he's good, exactly. Got any other notes or is that all?
That is the end of my notes, but I will finish off by saying it was a good game. You know, that was a fun one to watch.
For an hour's investment or thereabouts, especially if you watch it delayed and skip through the ads, it's something I think Australian audiences could get into and probably should get into.
Yeah. It almost makes you wonder if there's a 2020 version of basketball hiding in here somewhere. Ooh. Maybe that's 3-on-3.
Yeah. This is so much better than 3-on-3. I'm still, it's a foreign language to me. I see its potential. I get it, but as a spectator sport, I'm not ready to jump on.
No, I'm too old as well for that, for 3-on-3. That's a kid game.
Yeah, exactly. No, just not quite. Looking at tomorrow, July 7th over there, July 8th for us, we're looking at day four. We got two games. And there's going to be some NBL talent coming up.
Or is Team there? I've got a question about this.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, you carry on.
I'll list the two games. I'll do the Eastern times, you do the Western time, okay? Team ALS featuring what I think is Casper Ware and Marvell Harris, who used to play for the Illawarra Hawks, play Sideline Cancer. That's at 4 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
2 a.m. Western Standard Time.
And then the next game is Boeheim's Army featuring Eric Davendorf, formerly of the Melbourne Tigers, and they're playing Metamaki, and that's at 6 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
A very ugly 4 a.m. in the morning if you're in Perth.
Watch these over, just to let everyone know, I won't be watching them live. Okay. Neither. I'm not going to be up at that time. Not going to.
No.
What was your question about the NBL talent?
Well, I was just looking before we started recording today. I was looking up what to look forward to and Team Challenge ALS, and I noticed Casper Ware and Marvell Harris. Mm-hmm. Harris. I went to their team page on the tournament website, and neither of those guys are listed.
Wow. I didn't do that little research, but I've heard Casper Ware's name thrown out a bunch in the telecast, even from this last game. But that is concerning on the website.
It is. Because we're seeing NBL talent falling.
I haven't scoped Casper Ware's Instagram to check if, you know, a photo of him in the bubble, like, oh, going in. I don't do that stuff. But yeah, interesting.
He was definitely listed as a player a week ago. I did the research. I went through and I pulled out a bunch of NBL player names.
Oh, so you're not saying, was he on that player, a team profile list, and now he's not?
Correct.
Or do you...
Correct. Yeah. So when I did my research, less than a week ago, we had Casper Ware and Marvell Harris as player cards on the team listings.
And now they're not.
And now they don't seem to be. And I'm even questioning my team charm. I'm looking again to make sure that I'm not making a mistake. Sean Marshall, Jalen Bland, Stephon Branch, Jordan Faison, Marquez Haynes, Tyrese Rice, Deshaun Stevens, Malcolm Thomas. That's it.
Okay. This is
players.
Andrew, this is fine investigation work by yourself. I can neither confirm nor deny anything. I'm gonna send some emails though. I'm gonna ask, why isn't he on the profile? Is he playing? Is he not? I mean, the suggestion would be, has Casper Ware turned in a positive COVID test and hasn't joined the bubble? But we would have heard that already, wouldn't we?
Well,
that's the question, isn't it?
Or has he, you know, on a brighter note, maybe he's signed a contract somewhere and they're precluding him from playing?
You know what? It's all speculation at this point. Let's do some work and come back to that. That's good on you, Andrew. Well done.
We're getting good at this stuff.
Getting good at this. We're going into day four. Day four of 11, I think it is. So we're finally getting there. I think that wraps up day four, doesn't it?
It does indeed. I'm looking forward to day five.
Day five, those two games tomorrow. Just quietly, what we'll do now is I have an interview that I pre-recorded. I probably recorded this on Friday, last Friday, whatever date that was. This is with John Robson. This is as he checked into the bubble at the TBT. He was actually unpacking his bags for a part of the interview. So we didn't discuss the latest win they've had, but it's everything else. So after Andrew and I are done, it'll jump into that. I'll put a time code so people can skip forward to it, because we do talk about sort of how he came to play into the TBT, and then also we talk about NBL 20 as well. So it's a bit of both. Do you have a Twitter or Instagram? You don't. You don't like those two things, or do you have one?
No, I have an Instagram, but I do not have a Twitter. Everybody keeps telling me I need to get a Twitter, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
I thought maybe that was deliberate, you know, like Instagram is a lot more pleasant than Twitter. I think I thought maybe you'd come to that conclusion yourself, but no, you just haven't had the time.
I just feel like it's too much. Like, I don't want to be on social media all day, checking my phone all day, and I already do that with Instagram, so I couldn't imagine how much time I'll spend on my phone if I had another, you know, social media app. So I just try to stay away from it.
Do you get a lot of contact with fans? Like, on an average, would you get 10 messages a day, 20 messages a day?
During the season, it's a lot.
Really? Like 20 a day, just like ping, ping, ping?
Yeah. Especially, you know, after a game, you get all those messages. People kind of like tagging you in their story or sending you a message about the game.
Sure.
So it can kind of be a lot. And, you know, throughout the season, you get a lot of messages from fans. It's pretty cool interacting with the fans, but sometimes, you know, it can be a lot.
I mean, we saw Melo Trimble cop some heat. Did you ever cop any heat in those things?
He caught. I didn't see what happened.
He got messages that were Like, I think he either played well or played poorly, and people were like, oh, you cost us the game, whether they were United fans or the other team. He had messages. You didn't get anything like that?
I have before, not in Australia. But I've definitely gotten some of those messages before when I was in other places. Got some hate mail saying that I cost them money. They had some money on the game. And
that was the big thing.
So, yeah, I've definitely gotten that.
John, let's rewind the clock a little bit. I had Bryce Cotton on the podcast a little while ago. We spoke at length about like his NBA draft experience and that he was at Providence of the NBA. What kind of bugs me about yours is like you're one of the best three-point shooters in the world. You've seen that stat that compares you to Steph Curry. I think you and Adam Gibson talked about it. That draft, I think the one you were eligible for was, what, 2011?
Mm-hmm.
Was there any conversation around there? Tell me about that sort of transition from Texas Tech where you were at college to the NBA. Did you have scouts looking at you? What was that conversation like?
It didn't really. I think it was due to the part that we didn't win enough at my college. If we would have kind of made a little bit more noise during the season, I think I would have had, you know, maybe some looks, but we didn't win. And I think my last year, we didn't even make it to the NIT or any postseason tournament. So that kind of hurt my stock a little bit.
And not winning in that final year, what do you put that down to? What did you put it down to?
You know, it's just we were in a tough league. Big 12 is tough. You know, tough conference, good team. So we just didn't have enough.
Do you think did you enjoy playing in college? Like I think I heard you with Adam Gibson, you were like, oh, I kind of wasn't ready, or you didn't quite have the college career you wanted. Why do you suppose that was? What would you have done differently?
I think I didn't really get introduced to hard work that I was professional and worked professional and became a job. And, you know, I was just relying on my talent in college. And I think once I turned pro and I realized how hard you have to work to make it, and if this was going to be something that I wanted to do and make money, that I had to just, you know, work as hard as I could at it, I think that's when I really understood that and, you know, started really applying myself the way I should be.
When you say hard work, like if you had to quantify it, like you get up, are you getting up at 6 o'clock every morning? Do you train for like 6 hours a day? If you had to put like a numbers on it, what does hard work look like in a numbers sense?
Different for everybody.
Right.
I think it's different for everybody. Some guys won't have to work as hard as others. You know, some guys are just more talented. That's just how it is. But I think for myself, just staying consistent, being in the gym every day, making sure I'm in the best shape possible, watching what I eat, just that productivity and just, you know, being consistent with it is something that I learned as a pro.
Are you, when you say what you eat, are you a keto guy or are you on something different? You low carbs, high protein, what do you do?
Pretty much high protein. Just trying to eat clean, you know, grilled chicken, vegetables. I'm kind of a big snacker, so I have to watch my sugar intake. So, yeah, man, when I was in Australia, I would think I was addicted to hundreds of thousands of cookies. So,
hundreds of
thousands. It's just, you know, watching what you snack on.
Yeah, right.
You know, things like that.
Sure enough. You're in the TBT bubble at the minute where you're quarantined now. If you go through the tournament, you're there for the next couple of weeks. Tell me about the TBT. What was the appeal for you? Other than the prize money, like what do you like about the tournament itself for playing?
Man, I love the fact, like right now, I'm playing with guys who I played against, like Scott Machado, like Cody Clark, people that I've seen in EuroLeague and guys who I watch play and have, you know, a ton of respect for. So it's just that added that opportunity that you get to play against guys, great competition, and you get to play with guys that you wouldn't normally get to play with. So it's, you know, it's an awesome experience.
You got a bunch of NBL guys on your team. You got, as you said, Machado. Is Tarico White there?
Nah, he's not.
Didn't make it. Oh, damn.
He didn't make it.
He was going to be there. Well, yes, Tarico White and Cotton were going to be on your team, right?
Yes. So that was the plan. When we first started talking about it, they were supposed to be here. But, you know, they didn't make it. But I wish they were.
Let's say they had made it, and it was going to be you, Machado, Tirico, White, Bryce Cotton. Were you four all going to take the floor? Did you guys have that conversation with Armour Athlete about what was going to happen?
No, we didn't. I don't think we got that far in the conversation. But I mean, I think all of us are selfless. Like, I wouldn't mind, you know, coming off the bench. I'm sure whoever wouldn't mind coming off the bench. It's all about matchups anyway in this tournament. So, so I mean, whatever it takes to win, we would have done.
Right. How did there's now two of you, but how were the four of you going to end up on the team? Did you kind of get the call from Armour Athlete and then you tapped Scott Machado on the shoulder and said, hey, do you want to play in this thing? Or it just was a coincidence that you're on the same team? Or did you guys collaborate a bit?
Actually, Armour Athlete contacted me last year. So I played with them last year. And that's before I knew Tirico White. So he was already on the team. And then, so he had been playing with them for a couple of years before. And after that last year, they said that they were going to try to get some more NBL guys.
Right.
So, I had no idea they were trying to get Scott Machado. It just ended up like that. And they asked me about him. I'm like, yes, get him if you can get him. So, it just worked out.
What do you like about Machado's game? I've seen him play. We've all seen him play. But what do you like about him?
Man, I just like the way he played, like this his style, the fact that he can get everybody involved. He's like a floor general out there. He's very in control and sets the tempo. Very smart point guard, sees the floor. And for me, you know, I'm a point guard also, but I think we have different styles. So I think our styles complement each other and we can be on the floor at the same time. Because I'm more of a scoring point guard, I'm more of a shooter. So, you know, having somebody who can pass and find you is perfect for me. So
that was my next question on how you two, let's say you're going into this thing. I'm assuming you two are going to start next to each other. I haven't looked at the other team sort of superficially. How do you plan on sharing the backcourt, both offensively and defensively? Like you guys are sort of that, I don't know if size is an issue, but, you know, how do you think you guys are going to share that backcourt?
Well, I think Scott is a bigger guard. He's about, you know, 6'1", 6'2", so he can guard a two guard. You know, this year playing against him in Australia, he was guarding post-ups. He was switching on a bigger player. So he's capable of guarding people in the post. And, he's strong guard. So I don't think that would be an issue.
Tell me who's someone in another team who you've either played with internationally or got a reputation who you're like, I would never say worried about, but a player who you're eager to play against.
Man, there's a lot of guys, man.
Right. There's no one
guy.
There's
a guy actually I grew up with in Florida, and a lot of people don't know this, but we grew up in Florida together, played on AAU teams since we were like 7 years old. Mm-hmm. He plays he's one of the like a legend in Greece, Nick Kalathis.
Right.
So I mean I know I know him on a personal level, but have never got a chance to play against him. Like since high school, so that would be fun to match up against him. That would be crazy.
Nick Kalathis, I've seen him play. I think I've seen him play in the Olympics. I think he was playing for Greece. Bubble and Squeak. You played D1 college, Texas Tech. You played all across Europe. You can name the places. There's a lot of them, and now the NBL most recently. What's the media difference? We spoke a little bit about fan engagement online, but what about the media difference? Like, is there more pressure in the NBL? Did you find the NBL media a breeze? Like, did you have to give a lot of interviews? Did you find the sort of columns that were written and the criticism was better? How'd you find it?
Yeah, it was definitely different. And I think only because I understood what they were saying.
Right, okay.
Like, so Australia was different. Like you have people speaking English. I understand everything they're saying about me or whoever they're talking about. There's a lot of media coverage, a lot of interviews.
Really?
It's probably not as much as the NBA, but I felt like sometimes I was like in the NBA, how much media coverage and just how organized everything was as far as like the content and what they were putting out. And it was pretty good. It was a good experience to go through that and see how that works.
And you thought the NBL had quite a lot. Sorry, John, you broke up a little bit there. So you thought the NBL had quite a lot of player interviews.
Yes, they did.
and it was mostly positive, or did you find a lot of time you were reading stuff and like, oh yeah, okay, well, I'm gonna show this writer something at the next game?
I don't think, to be honest, and I'm just being honest, I don't think there was a lot of negative things written about me personally, but there was, you know, at times where I thought like some media personnel or whoever, they were like being very negative towards other players in the league. And that was kind of a first for me. I had never experienced that. So I'm just lucky they weren't talking about me.
Yeah. Let's talk about NBL 20. I sort of looked at your game logs, you know, to see like who you kind of went off against. Looked like you had a lot of your highest scoring games against Brisbane. You scored high and you shot a pretty good percentage. I was going to ask you why. Do you remember? Am I remembering this season correctly? Did you feel like the Brisbane Bullets was the team you most had the best success against, or do you remember another team being like, oh, I remember playing great against them?
Yeah, I mean, I did have some good games against Brisbane. I don't know. For me personally, I don't look at a certain team and think like, oh, yeah, I can go out there and well against. I try to play well against everybody. And I guess it just happened, you know, that I played better against Brisbane. But, yeah, I mean, for me, it doesn't matter who I'm going against. I'm going to try to, you know, bring my best game.
With Cairns, that game we had the huge comeback. That was sort of like the blue ribbon event of your last year. Do you remember anything specific about that game that led to that performance? Like, were they going under on screens? Was someone catching them? Was there an unsung hero? Was a Dane Pinot doing something that allowed you to get those shots? Or did we just feeling it? What was it?
I think what happened was the game before that, we had lost a close game. And I think at the end of that game, I blame myself because I could have did something better or different to help us win. So I kind of had that in my head. And when we were down, I just remember thinking like, not again, like you have to make a play. And it just so happened that, you know, Dane got a steal. And, you know, in my head, I just thought like, just make a play, give us a chance to win. And then I was able to hit that three to tie it. So, I think my mindset was a little different. And, you know, just not wanting to lose and just, you know, trying to do whatever I could and just help our team win and make a play.
Your team was interesting. Like, I really like to watch you and the Phoenix play, but obviously you guys went on a streak of, you know, 8 or 9 losses at the end there. I've spoken to Simon Mitchell on this podcast before, and he was sort of like, well, we kind of put it down to two things. Injuries, probably number one, and then just like closing out games late. And that's a question I have for you, John. Like, closing out games late, why did you think that was an issue? And what would you do differently looking back?
Man, I think it's just a case of those. It was our first year as a team. And we, you know, we started off the season well. Mm. And then I think, you know, we started, you know, like you said, we had injuries, started changing players. We had guys come in, you know, halfway through the season, and it just kind of, you know, when you do that, you have to change on the fly. Some guys that you haven't been there all year have to know the sets and this and that, and just the different, it's just different. And I think, you know, I think it's just sometimes it happens like that, like no answer. You know, there's just some things that just go our way, you know? Some things at the end of the game, like I remember against Melbourne at the end of the game where, like, we could call for, I think, 3 straight fouls. Trimble goes to the line, knocks down free. We were ahead that whole game.
And I remember just, that one.
Yeah, it's just things that just didn't go our way sometimes. And I mean, that's just basketball, you know? That sometimes it happens like that. And But I'm really proud of my guys, how we continue to fight the whole season.
I agree. And I looked at that team. Like, the game that really stood out for me was that, I think it could have been the last game of the season against Sydney, where we went to overtime but lost still. Creek got hurt. Or was that the second last game of the year? I can't remember. Late in the year. Like, that game, I was like, this is a team that's, what, second on the bottom, a second or third from the bottom, and that's competing with the top team. I was like, this, if things had gone differently for this team, I feel like you guys would have been in that winner's circle, definitely around the top 4. And it was a depleted roster. One thing I wanted to ask you, Devondrick Walker came in, didn't really light the season on fire. What would be your advice or words to fans about, like, when an import does that, when an import comes into a team mid-season? I think fans are a little unsympathetic towards a player coming in mid-season, new team, new coach.
Yeah.
You know, what would be your advice to fans? Like, what sort of leeway do you give on an import? Like, all right, he's good, he's bad. When do you, what's your advice on that for fans?
Man, it's tough to come in the middle of a season and gel, you know, not just on a team, but, you know, personality-wise. And he did. Like, he gelled with everybody. He was a great teammate. But then it's, you throw somebody out there and, you know, I think his first game was against Perth on the road.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough for anybody. And you can be prepared to go to Perth on the road and still, like, you know what I mean? It's just a tough situation to be in, you know. And, I mean, it's just one of those things where – you know, he got thrown in the fire. He in a different situation. I think he played well. I think maybe he didn't play as well as he thought he could play, and that he knows he can play. But I mean, it's just one of those things when you come up to a different team, and like towards the end of the season, we've been playing together all year. You kind of, you know, it's just hard to find your role, find your feet. Like, you know, it's tough.
I kind of give imports. I'm like, all right, I'll give them a quarter of the season. I'll give seven to eight games is a good little thing. When they've come in mid-season, it's sort of a scramble. Like, you can't tell if a player's good or not. But a quarter of the season to adjust is minimal. And I look at a guy like Deshaun Taylor, play with Kings, was looking shaky at the start there and then came along really strongly towards the end of the year. So I kind of put like a quarter of the season. I think people are quick to say, you know, oh, that's not a great first game. This import's not very good. Let's make a move.
That's another thing. Exactly. Like that one game could get in their head, you know? Now they're overthinking. Now they're thinking too much. They hear all this outside noise. Hmm. I mean, it's a lot of different things that can go into it.
You mentioned Perth there, how Devondrick Walker's first game was against Perth on the road. Two of your three lowest scoring games were against Perth. My question is why? I mean, people often say like, oh, that's just Wildcat basketball or whatever, but I'm trying to decipher, is there something more specific? Why are they such a defensive hit?
I think they're good defensively because they know who the main guys are on the other team. And right. I think they do they have a collective effort not to let those guys beat you.
What was the strategy against you?
I think they, you know, they gang up. They have eyes on me at all times. I'm not getting a lot of open looks. You know, they're blitzing me. They have two guys on the ball screens. They're just not letting me, you know, get looks, and they're making me give the ball up. And, you know, yeah, I think they do a great job at that, and they have great game planning. And they stick to the game plan. They have smart players to execute. So, yeah, there's a solid ball club.
What's the remedy? If you're tapping Simon Mitchell on the shoulder and saying we're playing Perth on the road again, what would you do differently?
I think you have to, you know, kind of use their aggressiveness against them, get a lot of, you know, more back doors, attack. You can't be afraid of their physicalness. You just have to attack them and, you know, try to get to the foul line, try to get calls. You know, it's tough there, but it is doable. You know what I mean? You just have to have one of your better shooting nights. I think every time we played them, we just didn't shoot the ball well. We get good looks. You just have to knock those shots down.
Is it the rims in Perth? Did you find them tight? They make a strange sound on the telecast. TV?
I don't want to use that excuse. I know a lot of people were saying the rims are tight and everything, but nah, I'm not going to use that excuse. I'm a shooter. I can't make that excuse. Right.
Because I know there's a lot of sort of backdoor shenanigans if, like, you know, the ball's a bit more inflated in places where they want to push the pace. No, you haven't had that? Good idea. Bryce Cotton, you've played against him. What he's the MVP. He's the kind of the guy this championship of the next – well, he signed for 3 years. So he's the guy that the NBL championship goes through in the next couple of years. What's his secret, if he has one? You know, what makes him tough to guard? What do you do?
Well, in that offense, he has the ultimate freedom. You know, he has
Right.
Guys set him a lot of screens. They're looking for him, you know, most of the time. And, you know, he just knows where his spots are. He picks his spots. And it seems like he never gets tired.
Yeah.
Like he's going full speed the whole game. I feel like he never gets tired. He's running off a screen full speed the whole game. So he's a tough cover. And you can never, you know, let your guard down because he'll hit you for, you know, three threes in a row and it's that quick, mm-hmm. you know. So you can never, you know, let your guard down with him.
You mentioned freedom. Do you think you have the same? Did you think you had the same freedom at Southeast Melbourne that Bryce Cotton did at the Wildcats?
Yeah, I think so. And that's, you know, it took me a while to take advantage of that freedom because I wasn't used to it. But yeah, Simon Mitchell definitely told me that I had the keys to the car, and he wanted me to, you know, be the guy to take those shots. And if you know, yeah, I mean. He said I wasn't shooting enough at one point, so I've never been told that before. So definitely wanted me to get him up.
The Phoenix kind of got a bit of heat for that. Like I thought, even though you guys were losing, I never didn't enjoy watching your games. I always thought you guys were fun to play. You guys copped a bit of heat for that from certain places where it was like, oh, there's just no defense, and a huge offense. Did your team have a strong offensive emphasis? And do you feel like that style works? Where's the balance, do you think?
I think we had an emphasis on defense as well. I just think that you know, it's with the style of play in Australia, the up and down, like the freedom I talked about. You got to have guys who are. Defensive stoppers, and I think our team was more built around offense.
Right.
We had a lot of guys who could put the ball in the basket, but really didn't hang their hat on the defensive end.
Right.
Who weren't necessarily defensive stoppers. So, you know, when it comes down to it and we needed to stop, I think sometimes we weren't able to, and that hurt us. So.
And you feel like in the NBL, you like team defense, because it's so up and down, team defense is a little bit less important than like a guy who's just a real plug on defender type of guy. In fact,
you got to have team defense as well. You got to have team defense as well. But I think more guys on our team, like we were more offensive minded. And you know, like Australia was probably one of the leagues that I played in that was the fastest pace. Like it was very fast paced. Guys are coming down shooting with no hesitation. So you got to be, you know, they have to have a lot of communication. You got to know what you're doing, and you have to react very, very fast. So you got to be on the same page with everyone.
Speaking about like offense and things like the NBL, like basketball is a pro level. You've done it for a long time now. It's an entertainment product. Are you comfortable with thinking about yourself as an entertainer? Like, I don't know what you put in your tax returns. I remember hearing the JJ Redick podcast, and yeah, he plays for the Pelicans. He said that on his tax return, he puts entertainer. Are you comfortable thinking of yourself that way? Do you think of yourself that way?
I really don't. I mean, I know basketball is entertainment at the end of the day, but I feel like, I don't know. I'm not going out there to entertain. I'm going out there to win.
Right.
So whether it's ugly, whether it's entertaining or not, you know, I just want to win at the end of the day. So I don't really think of myself as like entertaining people.
Sure. Makes sense. I want to talk to you about NBL 21 or going forward. I don't know if you watch NBL Overtime or not, but the question was put to Liam Santa Maria, who's a writer in that, whether they would re-sign you or not. And it was sort of a yes or no. And he sort of gave a begrudging, it wasn't an easy decision for him, but he did side with no, that he wouldn't. And he did say, oh, you know, a Scott Machado type player doesn't grow on trees, but, you know, Southeast Melbourne need that distributing guard. How would you respond to that assessment?
Hey, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think, some guys like the Scott Machado type to distribute, and some guys like the scoring point guards. It's just about what the team wants and what the team likes.
Do you think you're a distributor? Like looking at Southeast Melbourne's year that they've had, And if you were to return, like, what do you think you plug in? What would you do differently? Or what type of play would you like to see them bring in to complement you? What do you think?
Definitely like to see a shot blocker, a rim protector.
Right.
You know, somebody who can just plug up the middle. I think that's what we, you know, we really needed somebody down there that could definitely plug up the middle and protect the rim.
Right.
Yeah.
What about, like, is there a local point guard who could maybe come in and do a little bit of more distributing? Or do you think, you know, is there a player that you often thought, oh, an Australian who you looked at and thought, I'd like to play with him? Who's a realistic get, you know what I mean?
I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head.
That's all good. I want to talk about entertainment value. For me, the most entertaining players in the league were Bryce Cotton, yourself, Cam Oliver, and Lamar Patterson. You know, I always felt like when you guys were in the game, something good was going to happen. Do you watch a lot of the other NBL guys? Do you ever catch yourself being entertained by any other players? Like, do you watch other NBL games? And if so, do you enjoy them?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely like to watch, like you said, Oliver. I think he was, I mean, amazing this year. Him and Machado were a great duo. Nubel as well. You know, Bryce Cotton was unbelievable. I like to watch Sydney. Just their style of play was
really
was fun to watch.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I like to watch them. Who else? I think LaMelo had a great year.
Okay.
He was fun to watch.
You enjoyed his style?
Yes. For him to be so young and for him to go out there and do what he did, you know, he's getting triple doubles. Like, that's, you know, that's crazy. So that was fun to watch as well.
I was told a funny story that the first time you and Southeast Melbourne played either in Illawarra or against Illawarra, they maybe hadn't got the scout correct on you and were going under screens. And naturally, that's a bit of an issue. And you lit them up. And apparently, that was a running joke all through the year with the Hawks that that they scouted you and went under screens. I don't know if you heard that story enough. You heard about that?
Yeah, I heard about that.
That's kind of fun. Last question for you. I don't know if you watch a lot of the NBA or like basketball entertainment programs, but if you're in the NBL next season, you know, what would you like to see incorporated into a broadcast or coverage of the league and the game? You know, have you got an original idea for content? You know, I think it's very seldom that players get asked like, oh, what would be a cool content idea from a player? Do you have anything where you look at other leagues or something you experienced in Europe where you're like, that's a cool entertainment broadcast type style? What, have you seen anything like that, John?
No, I think everything the NBL did is way better than what they do in Europe. So,
really?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're on top of everything that they're doing is A+. I think they're, you know, they have the games on TV for people to watch. You don't get that a lot in Europe. So,
right.
I think they're doing a great job with everything.
Okay.
I think one thing I would want to see is an All-Star game.
Okay.
I know they do the blitz.
They used to.
Both in the preseason. But, yeah, I would love to see an All-Star game. I think that's something that's missing.
I think with the All-Star game as well, I mean, I love the idea of an All-Star game that means something. Like the All-Star game this year with Elam ending. Did you watch the All-Star game?
Exactly.
What did you like?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I think they could. Huh?
You go, John. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that's something that they could definitely incorporate. And I think that would make it a lot more fun because it gets serious when you play to a certain score.
Right.
I think that makes it a lot more competitive. And I think guys would definitely, you know, take it serious.
That's one thing I wanted to say with this TBT. Obviously, they're doing the Elam ending. I think it really plays into your style. Like, maybe I'm just remembering that game against Cairns, but I remember it being all year where it was like, you don't know whether you're going to hit 3-4 in a row. And you know, push ahead or come, you know, erase a 9 to 12 point lead. Are you excited to play in this Elam ending? Like, do you take it seriously? Do you think there's a real chance that that could change basketball and probably for the better for someone like you who shoots so well?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something that, like you see with the All-Star game, how competitive guys were. And it's just it's a great concept to the end of a game. And there's always a game, you know what I mean? Mm. And that makes it, you know, so much more exciting to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I really think this sincerely, because sometimes at the end of a game when a team's up like 6 or 8, they can just milk out the last 3 minutes and you don't have a good product. But with this ending, you're never out of it. I think it's a real future of the thing. Real good idea.
Yeah.
With the All-Star game, I think the good idea is, I love the idea of an All-Star game where it's the best players in the league competing for something of worth. Like, I'd even put, like, I don't know if you're a baseball fan, but, you know, for a while there, whoever won the All-Star game held the World Series or the pennant. I don't know baseball so well, but I'd even do something like that in the NBL where, you know, you represent your team and the winning team, you know, I don't know how you do it, but, you know, there's something real, maybe playoff seeding on the line, maybe a wild card option. Something. I'd make it really, really worth something. And then you've got the best players in the league competing for something. That's what I do anyway. But,
yeah.
Cool. John,
maybe
I guess...
be some prize money.
prize money's nice too, which is... This is the prize pool of this TBT is what? $1 million, yeah?
Yeah.
Decent amount of money. Mm-hmm. My last question too is the same one I put to most people. What's a question you wanted to be asked last year? Did you ever think, oh, I want to tell this story, but no one's asked the question, so I'll just keep it to myself. Did that come up for you last year with the NBL?
No, I was pretty much asked everything that could be, you know, how do I like living in Australia? You know, how do I like the culture? I think I was asked every question that could be asked. Cool.
There's no story where you thought, oh, I kind of want to say this about the league or it would compliment you or whatever, but you never got the chance.
No, pretty much answered everything.
One thing, I saw you on Adam Gibson's podcast. Like, I like that kind of stuff. Like, I like it when player-driven content. Did you like doing that podcast with him? Would you ever do something like that yourself? Host something like that yourself?
Yeah, it was cool. I think that was definitely something that I would do. And there's a lot of guys that I know who have already started doing that, and I've done some podcasts with them.
Yeah, cool.
And it's pretty cool to do that with another peer
player. Yeah, exactly. John, that's all I've got for you. Real pleasure chatting.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Once more, follow me and Andrew on Twitter. Rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And if you're in the business of buying a book, use booktopia.com via the link in the description. Thanks very much, and I will see you next time.